In 1957, Cash toured with the Collins Kids, a brother and sister duo originally from Oklahoma that was part phonetic rock and roll and part novelty act. Larry was the crazy and annoying kid brother. Lori was the older and more restrained sister. They both played guitars and had built up a reputation by appearing regularly on Town Hall Party, a Grand Ole Opry-style show televised weekly from the Compton District of Los Angeles. Within months of arriving in California, Cash and the Tennessee Two played on the show with Merle Travis, Bob Luman, Jeannie Sterling, Johnny Bond, and Joe Mathus. That day, the Collins Kids performed Elvis's I Got Stung, the Big Bopper's Chantilly Lace, in a blues medley. Although Cash had vowed to walk the line, his resolve was faltering, particularly when the now 16-year-old Lori Collins caught his eye. Over the next several months, as the Collins Kids played dates with him, they spent a lot of time together, and he became infatuated with her despite the fact that she was dating teen idol Ricky Nelson. She became aware of his feelings for her, but despite rumors to the contrary, insists that nothing transpired. It was a long time ago, and I have no idea why he felt that way about me, she says. It must have been the fact that I was young and the association with music, that sort of thing. It was just something that happened, but nothing ever took place between us. For the increasingly burdened Cash, the sexual chemistry was powerful and confusing. It was one of those things that just swept him off his feet, says Johnny Western. She had just blossomed into womanhood, and he was attracted. Sometimes he and I would get into my Jaguar and drive 50 or 60 miles into the desert, and he'd tell me things that he hadn't told anybody else. His marriage was falling apart, his daughters were small, and he felt trapped. He didn't know what to do about his feelings for Lori because she was so young. He'd say, what am I going to do? I said, Johnny, you love cowboy movies? He said, yes, I do. So I said, well, you got to step in the saddle and ride into the sunset on this one. This isn't going to work. You know it's not. It's going to cost you an arm and a leg, and people are going to blame this young girl for being a homewrecker. He said he still didn't know what to do. The problem went away when Stu Carnall began dating Lori and married her in 1959, when he was 30 and she 17. A rumor circulated that the marriage had been staged to prevent the exposure of Cash's liaison, but Western denies it. Stu was desperately in love with her. They stayed married for quite a while and had two children. Cash always returned home restless. He couldn't settle into the ordinary routines of suburban home life and craved the excitement and stimulation of the road. He'd be home and tired for a couple of days, and he'd play by his pool with the kids, but by the third day he'd be ready to move off, says Western. He got itchy feet. Work was his main hobby, and he absolutely adored being up on stage. If he wasn't playing for a few days, he'd be on the phone finding out about the next tour. Consequently, Cash stopped returning to Encino even when his tours ended. Instead, he often headed down to Shreveport to stay at Johnny Horton's home at 1610 Audubon Drive. He would hang out there for days, hunting, fishing, and playing music with Horton and Billie Jean. Sometimes the two men would disappear to another part of the house to discuss the ideas of the psychic Edgar Cayce, who claimed to be able to access special knowledge after putting himself into a self-induced sleep state and to answer questions impenetrable by reason and logic. Billie Jean made a huge impression on Cash. Besides being the gorgeous former wife of Hank Williams, she was a forthright and amusing conversationalist, an excellent shot with a rifle, and an accomplished angler. She loved the company of men and delighted in the knowledge that when she arrived at a country music convention or sat close to the stage for a concert, she would turn heads. If she was in the room, you'd know she was in the room, says Horton's former guitarist Reggie Young. She had huge hair and she dressed provocatively. She was the total opposite of the sort of person you thought Johnny Horton would be with. Horton, with good reason, was jealous of the attention his wife got. Tillman Franks, Horton's bass player as well as his manager, felt that the way she dressed when she attended concerts detracted from her husband. She was conscious, as was Horton, that Cash was paying her more attention than was usual from a family friend. Unsurprisingly, as someone who spent a fair amount of time trying to contact the other world, Horton was given to premonitions. The most persistent vision convinced him that he would die an early death. Specifically, he thought his death would somehow relate to alcohol. As a teetotaler, he concluded that most likely he'd die at the hands of a drunkard, perhaps after one of his concerts, and he became wary of playing in clubs and bars. Convinced of the inevitability of his premature death, he talked Cash into making a pact with him. If one of them died, the one remaining would look after the widow and children of the other, until they regained their stability. The annual DJ convention of 1960 took place at the Hermitage Hotel in Nashville, and Cash attended with Vivian. One of the rare times they traveled together without the children, she wanted to enjoy some private time together, but he wanted to hang out with the musicians and songwriters in their rooms. Later that Friday night, November 4th, they had what he later describes as one of our worst fights. Vivian went to bed while Cash scoured the corridors looking for action. Early the next morning, he received the news that Johnny Horton was dead. The night before, he had done two shows at the Skyline Club north of Austin, and while driving back to Shreveport in his 1959 Fleetwood Cadillac with Tillman Franks and guitarist Tommy Tomlinson, his car was struck head-on by a Ford Ranchero outside Milano, Texas. Tomlinson and Franks survived, but Horton was pronounced dead on arrival at the hospital in Cameron, 13 miles away. The Ranchero driver, a young student, survived. He had, in fact, been drinking. Cash couldn't leave for Shreveport right away because he had a session booked at Owen Bradley Studios to cut the title track of his movie, 5 Minutes to Live, but later that day he flew down to console Billie Jean. Horton's death seemed to unhinge Cash. Those close to him thought that he began acting weird and may have exacerbated his addiction to the amphetamines. The funeral was held 5 days later at the Rose Neath Chapel in Bossier City, Louisiana. Tillman Franks' brother, Billy Franks, preached the sermon. The Plainsman Quartet sang a gospel song, and Johnny Cash read from John 20, a passage chosen randomly by Billie Jean by flipping open the Bible. It was a glass-covered casket, and Johnny stood beside it as if he was talking to a friend, remembers Tillman Franks. He read the Bible with a catch of emotionalism in his voice. He was very quiet, but he never faltered. None of Cash's friends fully realized the depth of his feelings for Billie Jean. They interpreted his desire to be with her at this traumatic time solely as the actions of a man who had promised to take care of his best friend's widow. Johnny's marriage was unraveling and everybody knew it, says Johnny Western. Billie Jean was very beautiful. She was breathtaking in her day, and I'm sure that a lot of guys had romantic intentions toward her. Cash was the biggest thing in the world at the time, and he was helping her. I think it was one of those situations where people assume something is going on, whereas there was nothing romantic on Johnny's part. That said, his friends probably didn't know that immediately following Horton's death, Cash escorted the widow to New York for a 3-week shopping spree, staying at a hotel on Central Park and indulging her every whim. He told at least one person that he eventually intended to marry her. He spent so much money that was unreal, says Billie Jean. He bought me everything he could think of. I'd never been to New York before, and he had been so many times, so he wanted me to see everything. We were doing something all the time. Because I stopped eating when Johnny Horton died, he wanted to introduce me to different kinds of food to try to bring my appetite back.